This is Studio 360. I'm Kurt Anderson. As long as there's been a record business, musicians have had a tortured relationship with it. And for the last decade, as the record industry has imploded, it's only gotten worse.
I remember laying down, it was 1983.
Well, one day, not so long ago, the singer-songwriter Jill Sobule had a wake-up call, and it goes something like this.
23 years later, I'm here at a meeting, trying to impress someone at a dying record company. I got nothing to prove. And in walks in the sullen girl who looks like she's 19 or wants to be, with her biker boots and her hair dyed black. Did that look so many years ago? She looks at me like I'm some square, or I'm like her mother. Well, f*** you, kid, I got nothing to prove. Nothing to prove.
Well, Jill Sobule did prove something by raising $75,000 from her fans to record and produce this new album. It's called California Years, and it has a full quota of Sobule's delightful, witty pop songs.
I've got nothing to prove.
Jill Sobule, welcome to Studio 360.
Thank you for having me, Kurt.
So you were tired, clearly, of dealing with the record business as it's gone through its various earthquakes and dyings this last decade or so. But how did you get the idea and really take seriously the idea of raising money from your fans to make a record?
Well, I had the idea a couple years ago, and the one great thing is I keep close contact with the fans. I mean, it's not a huge, huge fan base, but it's a mighty fan base, and they're very loyal, and I think part of it is because I always write back. And
you have a website, and so when they email you, you email them back.
Right, and they know also I'm a kind of performer that when they come to see me and someone shouts out a song, I never, you know, I'm accommodating, just because if I like the song and I remember it, I'll do it. But they just know there's a good relationship. So a couple years ago, I emailed and said, what do you guys think about becoming my record company?
And how long, once you decided to do that and you set up the thing and said, okay, give me money, how long did that take?
Well, first I had to think about how I would do it, because I didn't want to say just give me money. I'd had to be in return for some sort of gifts and services.
Premiums, as we say in public radio.
Exactly. And you know what? It was a very public radio idea I had. So I had a couple glasses of wine and went over the different kind of levels of donation and what they would get.
So for premium givers.
For premium givers. So there's everything from
platinum level.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah. There's a theme song. I'll write you a theme song.
Really?
I think that was like $1,000. And I had house concerts.
Where you would show up in somebody's house and play for them.
And play for them. There would be in my liner notes, or the last song of the record is called the donor song, where your name is in it. And then the best one was, and this was a total joke, I didn't think it would happen, was Weapons Grade Plutonium, where you get to sing on my record.
And did it happen?
Yes, a woman from the UK came, and she did a bang-up job, I must say.
Good. So, what was the most surprising part of that whole sort of untried experience?
Well, the surprising part was I didn't know how well it would do and how fast. I mean, my worst fear is it could have been really humiliating.
Yeah, and you have to give the money back because it was only $400 or something.
Right, you know? Right. Well, I would have done it no matter if I would have gotten $400 anyway, but it could have been humiliating. But I think the surprising part was how great everyone was.
And once you raised as much as you did, is that when you decided, hey, I don't have to do this in this lo-fi way. I've got $75,000. I can do a full production. I can hire the superstar producer, Don Was, to produce it?
Well, actually, the $75,000 was not just to record it. That's probably just half of it. It was really to figure out, try to do what a record company does.
Market it and the whole bit.
Marketing, publicity, distribution. So even when I had my fantasy people on the record, they definitely gave me the poor artist rate.
Uh-huh. And in addition to all the obvious ways that it must be different than sort of working for the man and for a label and producing a record for them, was it better? Was it different? Was it scarier doing it on your own?
Well, for the most part, was better. The scary part was you better make sure that the people who donated it liked it. It was way more intimidating than working for the man.
You wrote and recorded this record called California Years after you had moved to Southern California from
New York.
From New York City. How come you moved?
I had a day job for a couple years writing for a show for Nickelodeon. I put out record at the same time, but it was a preteen show called Unfabulous, and I was scored it, and it was fun. It worked well. That was another surprising thing.
Do you find you write differently and make music differently in California than you did in New York?
I think that environment affects not what I write, but what I write about, and so I think the albums before this one, there's a lot of New York references, and because there are a lot of story songs. And I didn't really mean these songs to have any kind of connection, but when I heard them together, there was definitely this kind of California thing. And even in the sound.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And in fact, to prove that point, why don't you play another song? And I think I know what you're going to play.
All right. This is called Good Life. Tomorrow the ground may shake, like they said it was bound to happen one day, and the Hollywood sign will fall, the final call. Well, don't you fret and don't be blue. You had me and I had you. It was a good life. It was a good, good life. Tomorrow we could all be gone. When the Russian gangsters sell the bomb and the waves come roaring from the sea, 100-foot swells over Venice Beach. Well, don't be scared and take my hand. We'll swim into the promised land. It was a good life. It was a good, good life. It was a good life. It was a good, good life. Tomorrow a tiny cell might grow in everyone, and it's not the cold. Or the hole in the sky will open wide, the aliens land on the 105. If it comes to that, what can we do? You loved me and I loved you. It was a good life. It was a good, good life. It was a good life. It was a good, good life. I said a boom, boom, crash, crash underneath the overpass. Burning buildings, flying glass, a good life. On the day the earth stood still, we won't have to pay our bills. It's the mudslides down the hill, a good life. We won't have to make our beds. Break out the booze, like I said, let's have a ball before we're dead. A good life, let the pious rise above. We'll go down in our sweet love. It was a good, good life. It was a good, good life.
That is Jill Sobule playing Good Life off her new record, California Years. And God, I so love that record, rather that song. Los Angeles has this tradition of apocalyptic writing and fiction, and you've twisted that in this perfect, wonderful way of turning it into a cheerful, not nihilistic, but actually cheerful, you know, we're all going to die anyway, but buck up.
Right, it's kind of Day of the Locust meets Rebecca of Sunnybrook Farm.
Well, that works for me, yes. I'll tell you. When you were young, was there a moment when you decided this is pretty much what you wanted to try to spend your life doing?
Well, interesting. I have a brother who's 7 years older than me, so who played guitar, and his guitar teacher was Chet Atkins' brother. So my brother was a serious player then. So there were guitars always around, and my brother was my hero in my back then and my role model. So, and I was always a strange girl. I didn't want Barbies. I wanted a Les Paul. I wanted to be the female Jeff Beck or uh-huh. Eric Clapton. So I thought that's what I would do. And then I started writing songs later. But then when it got to late in high school and college, I thought, no, I have to be get a real job. And I was much more sensible back then. And it was by fluke that I'm doing what I'm doing.
Is there a song that had really sort of deeply affected you and changed your life that you heard when you were young?
Well, lyrically, I always was influenced by, my brother also had the albums of John Prine Records and the early Randy Newman, and I always liked how they tell stories, and there sometimes would be a little sense of humor, but they would be something tragic at the same time and playing with that. But Mott the Hoople and Bowie, where I went for the glam. So would you like to hear one?
Please.
Okay. Billy rapped all night about a suicide, and now it kicked him in the head when he was 25. Speed jive, don't want to stay alive when you're 25. And wind is stealing clothes from marks and sparks, and Billy's got spots from ripping the stars from his face. Funky little boat race. Well, the television man is crazy, saying we're juvenile delinquent wrecks. Oh, who needs TV when I got T-Rex? I'm a dude now. All the young dudes carry the news. Boogala dudes carry the news. Jimmy's looking keen, dressed like a queen, and can kick like a mule. Is a real mean team, but we can love. Oh yeah, we can love. Brothers back at home with his Beatles and his Stones. Well, I never got off on that revolution stuff. What a drag. Too many snacks. Well, I drunk a lot of wine and I'm feeling fine. Gotta race some cat to bed. Oh, it's concrete all around. Is it in my head? I'm a dude now. All the young dudes carry the news. Boogala dudes carry the news. Oh yeah. All the young dudes, hey dudes, carry the news. Boogala dudes carry the news.
That's the sound of the arena responding. Jill Sobule, thank you so much.
Thank you, Kurt.
At studio360.org, you can hear not just one, but two more songs that Jill Sobule performed for us here. Her new album is called California Years.